We have four daughters. Their names are Jody Dittmar. She and her husband moved to California. Second daughter, Jane Patton, is a member of this church. And the third daughter is Janelle Holmes. And also, she and her family all attend and are active here. And our youngest daughter is Jackie Mott, who also, she and her twin girls and family attend Hope. We have 15 grandchildren. Our oldest grandchild is 32, and our youngest grandchild just turned 8. It keeps us active that we have young grandchildren. We do run around like crazy people, going to every event one of our grandkids would have, because it gives them the message that what they're doing is valued. We sit in the same seats, the same section every Sunday, so that when the kids arrive, they can find us. Taking the kids to church on Sundays, we just knew that that's what you do on Sunday. It wasn't something we had to stop and think about or talk about. I have to practice what you preach. Modeling is where it's at. And that meant when you get a job, that means you can't be working on Sunday. That sometimes is tough. And that's been true for our grandkids too. They've gotten the same message from their parents, that Sunday's the sacred day and that's what we'll be doing. We have really lived with the knowledge that God has just blessed us over and over and over. Doesn't mean we haven't really had some tragedies, we haven't had some struggles. He promised us that would happen. And so we just are really aware how he stays by our side and really looks after us. I would like to just convey how much less traumatic it is raising a family when you stay in God's hands. Everybody prays, the kids too, and you just can get through crises so much easier. Not easy, but to just feel like you're in Jesus' hands. The stage that we're in now is that our kids kind of take care of us. I mean, they've learned that from the way they saw us with our parents, and now they look out for us. So we just are so blessed. The best thing about being a mom is the connection with my kids, in terms of being a friend, in terms of having a disagreement, in terms of being learning how to be more tolerant of each other. I love to sit around the dining room table and hear the kids tell stories about stupid things their mother has done. And history way back, I don't even remember some of it that they tell, and at least I pretend I don't remember. Just the connection with them each and to see them with their faith is just a mountaintop experience. We just know this is not an exact science, and that some days I walk around and go, what was wrong with me? That I would say or do a thing like that to my kids. And you know what's fun is now I hear my daughters saying, well, I sure messed up today. And you just have to be gentle with yourself.
It's an incredible piece of truth from Joyce. Joyce and her family are incredibly involved here at Hope. When they're here, she said, we sit in the same seats, and we're Lutheran, so we do that. And some of you sit in the same seats every single week. But when their family is here, the service that they go to, they sit right over here, right in front of me, right here. Kids are involved in different ministries here at Hope. They are on the production team. Her grandkids are involved in the church. But it's incredible wisdom that Joyce shares. When I was younger, one of the things that my dad is actually Pastor Dave, and so this is an incredible honor for me to preach with my dad. I learned this from him, so if you have any complaints about my preaching, talk to him. He'd be the one to go to. But when I was young, my dad told me, he said, you'll be as successful in life as older people that you can surround yourself with. People who have walked the road before you. Who can point out to you what are the things that you need to look out for. It's what Joyce just gave us. That's what Joyce pointed us to. Especially here for us on Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day. Such a great day, such an amazing and wonderful day. It's why you were handed carnations as you walked in here, why the women were handed carnations as you walked in here. It's because that's where Mother's Day got its start. There's a woman by the name of Anna Jarvis, just at the turn of the 1900s, and she wanted a way to honor her mother, to what her mother had done and what her mother had shown, not just her, but the community that surrounded her. So that's what we do here at Hope every single year, because we know. We know that motherhood is something that's incredible. It's a gift. But sometimes we narrow it so much to say that it's only our moms, or it's only the fact of whether or not I am a mom, which can make Mother's Day sometimes a really difficult day. And it is. Some of you here today are here, and Mother's Day has been a wonderful day. I know that because your face is showing the sun that you've been outside enjoying it today. It's been a wonderful day. It's been a day of celebration. It's been a day filled with family. But for others of you, Mother's Day is a difficult day. It's a difficult day maybe because the relationship that you have with your children has been lost. It's been fractured. It's been broken. Or maybe the relationship that you have with your own mother has been broken. Or maybe you've lost her. Maybe this is just another reminder of somebody that's not in your life any longer. And if that's you, we want to know that that's the importance of being church. The Bible tells us that we're to rejoice with those who rejoice, and we're to mourn with those who mourn. The Bible also tells us that we're one body and we're composed of many parts. So biologically, a lot of you are mothers. From an adopted stance, a lot of you are mothers. But I know from my own life, even having a family that was very incredible, blessed to be a part of my family. My mom is here tonight, which is so fun. But I also know that there were other people who stepped into my life when I was a kid, because there were people that I would turn to sometimes when I didn't know if I could turn because of the subject matter to my mom and my dad. And you do that. It's the amazing thing about this place. It's about church. It's about the community of family. It's what our theme is this year, to know and to be known. That we're here to carry one another, to support one another, but to give life to one another. Mother's Day is an incredible day to do that. For my family, here's my mom right here. And this is an intentional shot of my mom, because this is me running a race, and that's my mom. It was a cold, it was a miserable day, and my mom was cheering me the whole way. My mom was always the loudest one at any game, at any race. 40 years old, there's a race that I'm running, and my mom is still doing the whistle that I can hear the whistle. Those of you who can do the two-finger-in-your-mouth whistle know what I'm talking about. She did it sometimes to cheer me on. She did it other times to scold me, but usually because I deserved it. But that's my mom, and I didn't include a picture of my dad because he's right here. Here are my siblings. That's my brother Kirk and my sister Kirsten. She's the middle child. My brother's the oldest. And then there's my family. My wife Bridget and our two kids, Trey and Jade. It's a day of family. The importance of it. We're in the tail end. Next week is going to be the last week of this series that we are doing called You Asked For It, where we're asking the questions and we're looking into the questions that people are asking. Next week, we're going to do an open Q&A during worship. You'll come in next week to worship and there'll be cards. You can write your question down, put them in a basket. It can be anonymous. And we'll spend the sermon portion of that worship service answering the questions you have, because we believe that questions should be answered, should be able to be asked, maybe. But today we're looking at about faith and how can we pass on faith to our kids, to our children. And that we're not asking this because there's just a group of parents that petitioned. It's not because there are grandparents looking at their grandkids saying, God help them. It's not aunts and uncles who are just asking this questions. It's not teachers. It's not coaches only that are asking this, but it's everybody. And this is a big question. It's a question that, if we're going to be honest, has eternal consequences to it. This faith, passing this faith on, passing this gift on, is something that literally will give our kids, will give children, that which we ourselves can't give them. If it goes the way the order of life is supposed to go, and we know that it always doesn't follow that, but if it goes the way that it's supposed to go, our children, they will outlive us. And I know that that's not the case. And I know that there are people in this room that have lost a child, and my heart breaks for you. But there is going to be a day when our kids are going to be here and we're not. So what's the gift that we can give them? It's going to last. We know that it's important, especially also because of the world that we live in today. It's not easy. I graduated from high school in 1995. And even though that wasn't that long ago, just like 22 years ago this summer, just 22 years ago I graduated from high school, I am amazed at how much life has changed for kids. Have you seen this? When I was in high school, when I was in junior high, if I had a bad day, or if there was somebody who would pick on me or make fun of me, or if there was something that I did where I embarrassed myself, made a mistake, an incredible mistake, poor judgment on my part, I could go home at the end of the day and I could escape it. But today, kids can't. Everything is available 24/7. And the pressures, it's not just the kids though, is it? But the pressures and the bullying and the naming that takes place. We have some friends that live on our block. They have an 8-year-old son. And just on Friday night, we were sitting out in front of our house, and there's a bunch of families that were out there just kind of hanging out. And one of the moms, we were talking about her 8-year-old second grader. This blew my mind. She and her husband have told their kids that they can ask any question. They can ask them what any word means, what anything. And if they ask the question, they will never get in trouble. But if they act on something without asking the question, they'll be in a lot of trouble because they want their kids to always be able to come to them. So 8 years old, there were some classmates of his that told him to go home and to take his mom's phone and look up something on the internet. She said, second grade. We live in a different world. The rate of depression and anxiety in kids today is over twice what it was a couple decades ago. I mean, it's horrifying as a community to see how many young people are taking their lives. This is a real issue. This is a real heartbreaking issue. That we need to look at and say, what can we give our kids? What can we pass on to our kids that's going to give them some hope? An always present hope. That's what the beauty of the gospel, that's what the beauty of God's word and God's promises are in our lives. Psalm 46, verse 1 says, God is our refuge and our strength. Let's read this one together. It's so good. God is our refuge and strength. Always ready to help in times of trouble. There's no greater gift we can give kids, whether they're our own or whether they're just kids that surround us. We get a responsibility, a beautiful one. Responsibility that maybe we took for granted because maybe it has happened so naturally in our lives. But a lot of us ask the question, how do we do it? And I could talk about how to pass faith on to kids, but my kids are 7 and 5.5. So I don't know. It's good to admit the things you don't. But I look at my mom and my dad. I look at them and I ask them all the time, how'd you do it? My friend Colin and I, when we were in college, we'd go out to my parents' lake cabin and we would go out and fish. We'd fish all the time, but we weren't good fishermen or even proficient fishermen at all. We were terrible. But Colin and I lived together, and one night we were up super late and an infomercial came on. Remember we used to have those? We were watching an infomercial and all of a sudden our lives were changed because there was an infomercial on the Banjo Minnow. And if you bought the Banjo Minnow, all of your fishing frustrations were going to be gone. So Colin and I looked at each other and we said, we're going to be fishermen now. And all we had to do is send in three payments of $20 a piece. And if we did it in the next 20 minutes, we wouldn't get just one, but we'd get two of them. We thought, this is perfect. We thought we were going to literally have to put a lid on top of our boat because all of the fish were going to come and they're going to submerge the boat. They're going to sink the boat. So Colin and I, we called the 1-800 number. We ordered it. We were so silly. But we ordered it. And we thought because we paid more in shipping and handling than we did for the Banjo Minnow, we thought we'd get it faster. But it took forever. We finally got it. And we watched the DVD because they sent a DVD to teach you how to use the Banjo Minnow. So we go out to the lake the weekend after we get it. And we told everybody how amazing this was going to be. Next door neighbor at the lake loves to fish. He's a really good fisherman. And he had this wry smile. Colin and I went out in the boat and we went and we didn't even get a bite. I mean, not one. We wish we would have gotten a bite because if we would have gotten a fish on our line and it would have released, we would have gotten our money back. But because we didn't even get a bite, we couldn't get anything. So we got back and George, our next door neighbor at the lake, said, well, how'd the Banjo Minnow play for you? So we didn't get anything. Sometimes you can have all the right tools, but you don't know how to do it. Think about faith. We know that it's a good thing. We know the foundations are so good. We know the habits maybe that we want our kids and kids to be able to turn to know that God is our refuge and our strength. We know that to read the Bible is good and to pray is good and to be in community is good, but how do we do it? How do we pass it on? What are the ways that we can make the environment right? So for the hard part, I turn to my dad.
In 2 Timothy, we read the words of Paul that he sends to Timothy. It was late for Paul. It's no longer house arrest in Rome. He's in a Roman prison. Nero's become Caesar, and Nero's dedicated to eradicating this Christian faith that's been spreading all over the empire. And so it's late. And in 2 Timothy, the words that Paul writes to him are they are his last words. And what he writes to Timothy, he tells him to fan the fire of faith that's in him. Fan the fire of faith. It's kind of like waking up on a very cold day at the cabin, and all that's left of the fire in the stove is the embers. And you go and you blow on that and you blow and you blow and finally it begins to glow and you got some little sticks and you put and finally it just bursts into flame. Fan the fire of faith, he says to Timothy. And then he also reminds Timothy that he is the son of Eunice, and he says Eunice was a Christian, and also of Lois, his grandmother, who was a Christian. When you think of it, it's 33 years A.D., about the time when Christ died and rose again. Now it's 67 or 68 A.D. It's just 30-some years since. And yet, Timothy is a third-generation Christian. The faith has been passed on to him. How do we pass on that faith? For us, it was much more an art than a science. For us, it seemed to be much more caught than taught. But there were things that were very valuable to us in raising our kids. For one thing, we wanted a home of forgiveness. A home where we were able to say, I'm sorry to each other, or and where there might be some response to that. It's all wrong for so many reasons, this illustration that I'm going to give you, but when I graduated from the seminary, it was a male-dominated world, and it's much better in many ways than it was then. But Dr. Alvin Rognes was president at that time of the seminary, and we were seniors, and we were all men, and he sat down, and he said, someday, he said, you're going to have a terrible day at work. Things won't have gone wrong or right at all, and you go home. When you go home, lo and behold, you're going to find out that your wife has prepared the meal that she knows that you can't stand. And that's it. And so you let her know. And so you eat in silence, and then what do? You go out into the living room, you turn on the TV and sit there. Maybe you do, and you listen in the kitchen and you can hear the pots banging against each other and the dishes are rattling away. He said, what are you going to do in that moment? He said, you don't have to go in on your hands and knees and beg forgiveness. Maybe what you need to do is just go in, grab a towel, and stand next to her and dry the dishes. My question to you is, can you forgive? Can you forgive? And just as strong and important a question is, can you ask for forgiveness? We wanted to build a house where the faith would be caught and forgiveness was crucial. I have to admit that we also had a great compassion for our kids, even a sympathy. And the reason for that is that we weren't preacher's kids, my wife and I. We had the freedom of just being in high school and that. And we knew that for many, our kids would have a label. And really, we were in Hope in Fargo, and the church was large enough to have a very good youth ministry and children's ministry, and our kids found faith, friends of faith in the church. So they didn't face much of that. But our daughter did face it once that we know of in ninth grade when she was going through something. Teacher asked her if what she thought I would think of her if I saw her behaving the way she was. We never said anything to her, but we were sensitive to that. Guilt has a purpose. Guilt can bring us to our knees and we can confess before God, but guilt is a terrible way to try and to pass on faith. Some of you are here tonight and you've grew up in those kinds of situations and those experiences, and you spent a long time trying to get over that sense of guilt and to find the graciousness and the forgiveness that's ours in Christ. It's also important to remember that we are together in this in the church. When parents bring their children to be baptized, we as pastors ask them some questions, some promises they make, promises to bring the children to church and care for them and share that word at home. We ask the sponsors too, as they're able, will they support this child in faith? But also, there's a commitment we make to those parents that we're going to support them as a community of faith. And Hope goes a long way to try and do that. Spends a lot of resources in doing that. It gets the people here to organize these programs and to invite the volunteers to make everything possible as can be, that faith might become a reality in people's lives. No, we're not here on our own at all. We're here to strengthen each other. My wife, Benita, Jeremy's mother, and was teaching to our speaking to a Mom's Next group. It's a group of women whose children, most of them now are at least launched far enough to be out of the home during the day, and they come here every other week, and they're just a lot of them, and they get together just to share where they're at in life and experiences and joys and frustrations. And Benita spoke to them, and she told them, and she used Ephesians 6, and she used one of the Psalms, and she spoke about the need for parents to be a wall for their children. When you go lap swimming, if you're anything like me, you swim down to the end, you stop, you turn around, and then you go back. But when you watch the Olympics, you see swimmers who know how to use the wall. They come to it, and somehow they dive, and they push off from that wall, and it sends them and propels them back towards the other end. Children need a wall. Children need something to push off of. And it's not enjoyable to be a parent and to be that wall. God is our refuge. God is our strength. Sometimes as parents, we just simply need to come to God and to open up our lives. And, you know, as we're trying the best we can to just say, Lord, help me. Or, Lord, strengthen me. Give me the courage. Help me to get through this. Help my children to get through it. We who have had kids are very accustomed to that. We also wanted our home to be a place of love. And you know that great chapter of 1 Corinthians when Paul describes love. It's used at weddings all the time. But when you notice it, he's not talking about love as a feeling as much as he's talking about love as an action. And so when we seek to place love into the home that our children might experience it, that love is described as Paul as being patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful. It's not proud or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable. It doesn't keep a record of wrongs. It doesn't rejoice in the wrong, but rejoices in the right. Love never gives up, never loses faith, always is hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. A picture of love of parents for their children. I want to venture into an area here regarding parents and raising children. We went to Fargo in North Dakota, and we spent 28 years at a church called Hope, and it was a great place to be. When we got to Fargo, and it was 1978, a long time ago, everything was closed on Sundays. Absolutely everything. Maybe you could find a truck stop to get a little gasoline. You couldn't even get a quart of milk, which we tried to do to our frustration the first Sunday we were there. But by the time we left, Sunday was like any other day. Somewhere during the course of that time, people began to wonder, what time do we have left to do these things? And they found that the only day with discretionary time was Sunday. And it began the whole kind of emphasis and the whole kind of sport teams and sport travels. Look, I played athletics in high school. I played it in college. I love sports. I'm not against sports. But I do remember a time when our son was in sixth grade and they played tackle football. I went to his first game and I could see that he didn't like contact. So when we came home, I invited him into our backyard and I asked him to block me. And then I'm sure I raised my voice and I said, if you're going to play football, you got to love contact. My son never put on a football uniform after that. And I brought it up with him. I don't know if it hurt him as much as I think it may have hurt. All I can say about it is there's nothing wrong with athletics. It's great. And we get involved as parents and grandparents. But as Christians, there's Saturday night service, there's Sunday night service, and make that your choice and make that your discipline. Let your children know just how important your faith is. Lastly, don't give up. It's a much bigger picture than we even imagine. I have a brother who, by his own speaking to me, has found faith difficult. They were here and visited us about a year and a half ago at Thanksgiving, and we brought them here to Hope. We didn't talk a great deal more about things, and they got left. And so a year, and then it's the next Christmas. And I call him to talk to him, and he mentions something about the service here. And I said, do you watch the service? And I heard the chuckle. Yes. We were just there in February, and he told us that they watch every Sunday. It was about a week ago or so, maybe a little bit longer. We were out up the lake, opening it up for the year, and I was in the car driving in to a place called Detroit Lakes when I got a call from him. He's a little older than I am. He just received some startling news about his health. But he said to me, I'll be okay. I'll be okay. And then he told me, he said, you know, for so long, I felt like I've been on the outside of it. And now I feel like I'm on the inside. I'll be okay, he said. Don't worry about it. Then he wrote a letter. And in the letter, he signed, your brother. Not just in flesh, but in spirit as well. Don't give up.
I thank God for that. Thank God for that, because for me, it could be just like my uncle. Came a lot harder for me than I think it came for my brother and my sister. I was the pastor's kid of a large church and lived my life trying to live according to what I thought the people around me thought I should be. So I never really investigated it for my own. But there came a life when I hit my, or a point in my life where I hit my limits. Just did. Wasn't until I was in my 20s, I was away from the house at that point. I think they thought that I was going to live at home my whole life, but eventually I moved out. So I'm on my own, I'm living by myself, I've hit my limits. I don't know what to do. Life wasn't going the way that it was supposed to go. Everything that I thought was going to turn out a certain way, it wasn't turning out that way. And you know what? I thank God for the people who surrounded me my entire life. Most importantly, my mom and my dad.
Because when I got to a place where I started to ask the question, is there something more? Where do I turn? Where do I go? Where do I find the answers to the questions that I just can't answer on my own? You want to know where I found myself, much to my dismay? Church. Because I thought to myself, what was it about them? I mean, sure, I love them because they're my mom and my dad, but what was it? What was it that gave them a peace that transcended anything that I could think or understand? What gave them the ability to love not just us as kids, but one of my friends said to me one time, you know, we were the pastor's family, and so where other kids in my circle of friends, where their parents could have cared less what we did. They didn't keep an eye on us at all. But every weekend when people would ask the question, hey, where do we want to hang out this weekend? Everybody would say, well, let's hang out at your house. And I thought, but we have rules at my house. My parents won't let us close the door. They want to know what we're doing. Some years after that, one of my friends, his parents went through a horrible time and said, Nate, I never knew what was going on. He said to me, and I'll never forget this as long as I live. He said, Jeremy, not everybody's home was like yours. Why do you think that even though there were so many rules, everybody wanted to be there? Why? Because we knew that we were loved there. That chapter in Corinthians that my dad just read from, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, speaking of the power and the transformative nature of this love that is coming to us through the person of Jesus Christ. He says, there are three things in life that will last forever. You know these three things: faith, hope, and love. And the greatest of these is, why? Because it changes our lives. Jesus, right before he departs from his disciples for the very last time, he's giving his parting words, the last thing he wants them to know, the sending charge to him. We know it as the Great Commission. It's what we base the mission statement of this church on. Jesus says, go into all the nations and baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teach these new disciples everything that I've taught you. But then he doesn't stop there, because he knows that if they try to do it on their own, they're going to fall short. Because we do. So he says, be sure of this. I am with you always, even to the end of the age. What we are passing on, what we are handing off, it's the most valuable, the most precious, the most powerful gift that any of us could ever obtain in our lives. And it's free. Offered. We don't have to get it right all the time, because he got it right the most important time. Paul says in Romans chapter 8 that because of this love, because of this promise, that nothing in all of creation will ever be able to separate us from the love of God that comes through Christ Jesus our Lord. We need something more. The answer is Jesus Christ, the cornerstone, the building block of our lives, and the lives of our children and the lives of our children's children. And I think to myself, what are my kids going to be like if they're like the way that they are? But my parents asked the same question because they knew me. How do we pass our faith on to our kids? Model it. Make this a priority. Make this a place that they know that they are loved, that they are accepting, and that the doors are always open. Because Jesus never closes them.